Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
To all husbands with the same interests. Bow your heads as the Lord's mention.
Hello, everybody. It is John Pollock, along with Court Bauer. This is a micro version of Bauer and Pollock.
Bauer and Pollock style.
Your download speed was thanking us for this quick download. We wanted to get a show in before this insane weekend ahead, which is all going to come to my neck of the woods of Toronto. It is a daunting couple of days of all that is going on. We are going to chat about a lot of it. But Court, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm under the wire too. I'm heading out to LA in the morning. And so we wanted to get this show in and get you something since we were so busy last week with UFC 205, you covering it, me enjoying it. And what a week it's been for New York. You have UFC 205 with Conor McGregor walking around like Mr. McMahon. And then Mr. McMahon runs NXT last night at the theater in the ass of the garden. And the results were, you know, I heard people had a great time at the show, but it was a soft box office in terms of ticket sales. It did look full, and there's some tricks on how you do that. But let's just say the paid attendance was not so impressive. But we are time for NXT right now.
It is. And I mean, just quickly circling back to UFC 205, I did want to get your perspective because you watched it in the audience. I was in the back for most of it, just doing interviews and all the different media scrums. But tell me a bit about just the live experience, because this set the new Madison Square Garden gate for anything. Combat sports, regular sports, concerts, $17.7 million, which if you break that down amongst the 20,000 or so there, that works out to $866 a head if you're averaging it out. Just incredible numbers that they generated on Saturday. But what was the live experience like for you?
It was fabulous. I had a great time watching it and enjoying the fights. A lot of great fights, some good promos, really good promos, some shocking moments like Miesha Tate retiring. The crowd was a unique crowd. It wasn't the crowd I've seen in like the Prudential Center as an example, which was a lot more heated, a lot more diehard. This was more of a casual audience, more of like this is the buzzy thing to do. It's high dollar ticket. Let's fuck with UFC for a night and see what we get out of it. You know, there were some very, very casual fans. A lot of people where I was sitting were kind of like hooked up with tickets because of business relationships with the UFC. So, you know, where I was sitting, you could tell it's like they were curious. They weren't necessarily fans, but because of business, they were there. And in New York, there's a lot of business. The UFC and with William Morris Endeavor involved, you know, you're going to have that. But it was weird. The reactions were strange. Yeah, and then the Conor McGregor, you really felt the audience get amped up, and he felt like this. They came for this. But it was kind of like threw me back to the days of boxing, where boxing was really built around just the main event, and not that UFC isn't, but UFC is always presented as a really, you know, kind of a presentation, especially in its early years where you had stacked lineups. But now, you know, with the just the amount of fights they're doing. It's a different business, different animal. And it feels a little bit more like the boxing models where people show up a little later and a little later, and the reactions are more driven towards the main event. But I had a great time. I loved it. It was a fun experience. Watching it back, it really played well on TV, I could tell. So had a lot of fun.
Now, with Conor McGregor, he's now a two-division champion. This has been an incredible year for the UFC on pay-per-view, and they've done it without a Ronda Rousey fight on the calendar. And when you look at the business Conor helped to generate for 196, 202, the two fights with Nate Diaz, and then Saturday night, we don't know the pay-per-view number yet, but it's safe to say that it is going to be significant on Saturday. And I would imagine all three Conor McGregor headline cards are going to top UFC 200 this year. He now wants equity in the company. And as WME IMG goes into 2017, we know all of the debt that they have taken on in order to finance this purchase, which was just under $4 billion all told. They need Conor McGregor more than ever, Court. And if there's any fighter that understands his worth, there's no one more so than Conor McGregor. Is this something you are entertaining if you're WME IMG and incentivizing this guy to come back and fight regularly next year where you're going to need him?
He's doing it at the right time. Will he be able to pull it off? We will see. It's the move to make if you're Conor McGregor. That's a new regime in town with things they need to accomplish, and they need Conor McGregor to be a key part of that to accomplish it in terms of meeting their goals and getting a return on this investment in the shortest window they can. It'll be interesting because, of course, it's a slippery slope. You say yes to Conor McGregor, 10 guys, 50 guys are going to line right behind him, knocking on the door, wanting some sort of equity stake. It's a slippery slope.
Let's move on over to pro wrestling because there's no shortage of stuff to discuss. You bring up NXT. They are going to be here in Toronto on Saturday night, and they're running three consecutive nights at the Air Canada Center. Survivor Series sold out, and now Raw just about at capacity, but lots of tickets, at least doing a quick check on Ticketmaster just now. You can find tickets all over the place at the Air Canada Center. I don't know if it will be full or not come Saturday, but as of Thursday evening, you can certainly get tickets rather easily. Is this one night too many, Court? What is your theory on NXT in terms of a touring brand at the moment? And we don't know what the ticket sales are. Air Canada Center is a big venue. But, I mean, there is a thought to that because I would say 6 months ago, that takeover would have been the instant sellout.
Yeah. There's a few things I think at play. We talked a little bit about it on Tuesday's MLW Radio flagship show, how they were projecting soft ticket sales for New York. And they did have soft ticket sales, and they did augment that. And like we just talked about, you know, there's you paper a show, you bring in people from the Manhattan sales office to cover it, make it look full. People had a great time. They have soft ticket sales also for Boston. That's a concern. You also have it in a very hot market like Toronto. And then you look over to Australia, New Zealand. New Zealand canceled. Australia doing the bring your friend, you get a discount thing. It could be a combination of things. It could be the fact that you have done a draft, a brand split, and now you're asking people not just to watch and follow one version of the product, but two, but three, with SmackDown having a different roster, Raw having a different roster, and NXT having a different roster. And just there's only so much time in the day and to pick and choose. And also there's something to be said about maybe the creative direction. You also have Ryan Ward, the former head writer of NXT, moving off the product in the last few months. You also had Dusty Rhodes, who's very involved in the early years of NXT as they rebooted it as its current version from its original version and developing the talent, having his influence on the booking up until June of last year. And you also just have the change of talent and Bayley leaving and all these other stars, Finn Balor leaving. And Samoa Joe is amazing. Nakamura amazing. The undercard really good. Some Tommy, you know, if you sneeze, he might shatter at this point, which is unfortunate. But they have a bit of an identity crisis. Where do they fit in the WWF universe or WWE universe? And what master are they now serving? Do they need to reconfigure to be a little less ambitious and then focus less on doing these extensive international touring. Pick and choose select things, be successful, keep the prestige hot, and then, you know, have your takeovers in select cities, maybe not one piggybacking off of Survivor Series, but maybe, again, it's harder now because last year you had maybe – you had one WWE main roster pay-per-view, and then you'd have an NXT roster pay-per-view or network special. Now you have three a month sometimes on top of the other content. They're getting lost in the scheme of things, and it's unfortunate. A lot of great talent, and they're doing cool things, but something's clearly gone awry.
Well, you also look at a market like Toronto, and this was an experiment, and thus far the results, it feels that the priority for people that are buying tickets, it was Survivor Series 1, Raw 2, and NXT was a third. That's a lot to ask of some people going three nights in a row, even in a pretty starved market like Toronto. And now we see the business plan for 2017, which will start with WrestleMania and continue for the four big events every year, is running four consecutive nights in the host city to make this as attractive as possible to different cities. So we will get that in Orlando and then Brooklyn in August for SummerSlam, and then Houston next November for Survivor Series. And that encompasses a live takeover, the pay-per-view, Raw, and SmackDown. Mm-hmm. So they're doubling down here, Cord, and hoping that you're going to be enticed to come for four straight nights potentially.
Yeah, and WWE typically does this with everything. They very rarely will lean on the conservative side and actually pull back. They'll double down most of the time. It's just their way of approaching these things, whether it's with content deals or with this strategy. And this strategy may work on if you did it maybe for SummerSlam and Mania or Mania and Rumble. But to try to have maybe four or five of these big tent poles throughout the year, I don't think people are willing to travel that much. But some of that depends also on the quality of the product, the star power, and the economies, whether it's in Europe, Asia, or the United States and in North America in general and Canada, and what you're able to do and how much you can stretch that dollar to justify going to these events. A lot of variables.
That's also – for WrestleMania, you're talking five nights if you include the Hall of Fame there. And I mean, every year, it's never been – they've never tried to stretch that with SmackDown. It's always taken SmackDown to a neighboring city. So it's an ambitious one, but one in where you're no longer just trying to present SummerSlam or Survivor Series or the Rumble as a singular event. It's a package that comes with it where you're trying to attract tourists. You're trying to get outside of the bubble of that city's audience and get people traveling to that. I don't get the sense that for Toronto this weekend, there's going to be a ton of people traveling from all over the place for this weekend. Right. But that feels like what they want this to grow into, where there are four big destination spots for fans all over the world. And that's what you want these four to be.
It would be nice. But again, it's it's ambitious, and I don't know if the market or if the customer base can support it, and I don't know if their appetite's that large. And again, there's so many variables. They're going to try it, and we'll see how it plays out. Maybe they'll be able to find a way for NXT to stand out in this. But you know, SmackDown's chugging along rather well, and Raw is Raw, so they're still adjusting and fine tuning the main rosters. Where's the cruiserweight division going to be after Survivor Series? Are we going to have two divisions, one on Raw, one on SmackDown? Is it going to be shifted to SmackDown? Where's this all going? Plus, you have the NXT series on Wednesdays. Now we're going to have the 205 live show on Tuesday nights. So it's just, again, another show, and it's a lot to juggle. And of course, they don't expect you to watch everything. They're trying to put a lot out there. So if you're into one thing, that's cool. We just want to retain subscribers and give them different things to sample. But everyone has their threshold in terms of output of content, output of quality shows, output of great talent, and the ability to connect it all and make an overall big, great product. It's a lot to ask from internally and from the fans.
What would you grade the promotion for Bill Goldberg and Brock Lesnar heading into Sunday's match? And What has your interest this weekend?
It's been fantastic and consistent, except for that one hiccup in Minnesota. I'm thrilled with it. My interest is high. I hope Bill Goldberg's up to it because of I understand he has some shoulder, some possible elbow issues coming out of the angle he did on Monday night, which you know he was really rapidly trying to get back into shape after having surgery earlier this year. I think he would have loved to have done this match maybe at the Rumble, but hopefully he holds up because working Brock, you talk to anyone that works Brock, it's not like he's deliberately trying to hurt you. It's just the style he works is kind of like if you're a WWF guy in the mid-90s and you go to like All Japan and that style then, it's like, wow, wait, what's happening? Is this a work or is this a shoot? It's that big of a jump from the traditional WWE style to the Brock style. It's a real blunt trauma style. I hope he can hold up. I think there's still more money to be made in Bill Goldberg. And I'll be very fascinated and curious to see what they do for a finish to backdoor Bill into something else without taking that newness off of him that he has right now. And Bill's a guy that you have to protect, like a warrior. They're not durable with losses. Some guys are. He's not one of them.
He is, to me, he's the top babyface in the company at this moment. I cannot see them ending this Sunday. And whether that's the Hall of Fame next year, I think they're absolutely going to work this guy into more matches, at least one more after Sunday. And that's where the finish becomes interesting. I think everybody, Bill included, came into this expecting he's coming in, he's losing to Lesnar, and then we're off. The reactions have been tremendous. He has, you know, he's affected numbers, especially for that return in Denver, which couldn't have gone better. The segment this past week was really solid with the two of them. There's no way I could see them cutting bait on Goldberg after this thing, I think, has overachieved what people's expectation level were. Is there any way Bill Goldberg wins this match on Sunday?
You know, this might be one of those matches you have to do a fuck finish. That would be somewhat unfortunate, but to preserve Bill Goldberg and to preserve Brock Lesnar, who they basically have made the best man on the planet, you might have to do a fuck finish here. But it has to be a compelling fuck finish that takes you on a detour for Bill Goldberg on his path to whatever's next, and it has to be a compelling one. And for Brock Lesnar, it has to be compelling. How does The Undertaker factor into Sunday?
How does he factor into the company, period? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the big takeaway from SmackDown on Tuesday. I think based on that, Cord, it's a lock he's doing the Rumble, if not more, between now and WrestleMania. And having him there, certainly many different avenues you can go through. Mm-hmm. And whether he's there on the weekend or that's something down the road, I mean, we talked about it on our last show. I think that's a possible direction of The Undertaker and Goldberg. There's a lot of options there, but it's also options that are geared against your day-to-day performers and based more on nostalgia from the past and these dream match scenarios, which is kind of what they live and die on from these big shows. And that's what's carrying this one on Sunday, because you take Goldberg out of the mix, I don't know what the interest level would be for Survivor Series.
And there's a fine balance between building for tomorrow and building for the box office today. But they're not really balancing it right now. It's heavy on one side, very light on the other. And that's a bad dynamic to have. I'd like to see Goldberg mix up with some younger guys for a lot of reasons. And I think, again, you look at Undertaker versus Bill, what's the finish? And that's what Vince is going to ask for all these matches. That's what he always asks for these big dream matches. What's the finish? You want Taker to come back and get beat, or do you want Brock to go from maybe a loss at Survivor Series to another loss at the Rumble? That doesn't feel good. I think Brock can really give at the right time, at the right moment, the rub to someone, but it's maybe not that time. Bill Goldberg in a competitive program with someone on SmackDown or on Raw for the next few months, that could be interesting. But again, he's more of a guy you have to keep to a limited schedule to protect the mystique and the aura. The same goes for Undertaker. The same goes for Brock. They're all Band-Aids. They're all great magic bullets to have, but you only have so many of these magic bullets. But they're also up against the wall because we know what the subscribers, the subscription numbers are looking like right now. And they're trying a lot of strategies to keep that number looking good. And
I think they're putting out a GIF for all people about to unsubscribe of George Barrios on his hands and knees begging you not to leave, please. And it will be emailed directly to you. I think that's their next viral push to keep subscribers, because that's what it is. It's like, please don't go. Please don't go. We'll give you a free month. Just don't cancel. Please don't cancel.
It's a paperweight, actually. It's Barrios as a paperweight on his knees begging to you. It's a great thing for the stocking stuffers that you need.
It's actually just his hair with like a paperclip underneath it.
Man, we're getting mean here. But yeah, they're desperate to try to retain, and you should be. They're putting out a lot of content. They're not half-assing their business model at all when it comes to that. It's a little kind of aim and it's a little more shoot than aim. They're just throwing a lot of shit out there, and it's quantity over quality. It really
is.
Do you also
think, Court, that they're almost getting too promotional heavy with the network? Because I'm someone that subscribes to it. I've had it since it's been available here in Canada. I pay every month for it, and yet it's rammed over my head over and over. Free, free, free. It's like, to an average subscriber, you're almost telling them, why don't you just unsubscribe and get on all of these free promotional options that this company is throwing at you? Like, I almost feel like a sucker paying for this when it's so easy to get this for free and for multiple months, or at least a month if I unsubscribe, that you're subtly slapping your paying subscriber base in the face by so many of these damn promotions and just free being hit over and over again. But my bill comes every month and I'm paying for this.
Well, don't get hot about it. But what the bigger issue is that they're not spending any time trying to really cross over to the casual fan base. You can talk about trying to appeal to the lost fan base, maybe the fan base that left when WCW went out of business. That was 16 years ago, 15 years ago. But still, people are interested and curious about Bill Goldberg. But they're not crossing over enough to that casual audience. There's a hardcore audience that they are playing to that's hit them with that 2 million or just under 2 million subscription number. But if you want to blow that number up and really reach those long-term goals that they keep pumping and touting they want to hit, you need to cross over to the casual audience. And that takes doubling down in the quality department, come up with great storylines and compelling ways to cross over come your big shows of the year, WrestleMania, etc. There's ways to do it. Vince is a master of it. And that's what they need to do, is be able to cross over, grab those casual fans, keep them, retain them, and keep building that number. Because there is only so many of these hardcore fans, and you can only do so many tricks to keep them around. And some of that's dependent on quality. Some of that's dependent on the economics and what's going on in the economy, and how do they have that ability to spend that money every month, or are they going to work the system with all these freebies, these offers, these vouchers, these promo codes they have? But they really need to reach out to that audience that's not watching or maybe not aware. And that doesn't mean like the 1990s audience. It means the here and now demographic, you know, ideally the 18 to 40 audience. They need to grab a hold of them in a larger way. Not the hardcore fans, the casual fans. That's the sweet spot. That's what took them to the promised land in the 90s. And they're not focusing on that. They're just trying to really entice and romanticize the core base. And the core base more or less will be there. There's going to be a little lull here and there, but they're not going to all run off. But you need to build that audience for your viewers on USA Network, because in 2019 you have that deal coming up. So they have to focus on that. That has to be part of their 27th strategy. How do we cross over and grab those fans and keep them? And that's not easy. If anyone can do it, Vince can.
Maybe this all ties together, Court, because another thing, if you're in Canada, the network is not $9.99. It's $11.99. So maybe that's why tickets are a little softer for NXT. I'm paying $12. I'm staying home to watch this thing. You're not getting any more money out of me.
That's a good point. That's a real good point.
Looking at the Royal Rumble, as a man that served on the creative staff of the WWE.
As a man that once entered it, yes.
As a man that was a member of Shawshank, and then you got out. Every year, the Rumble is, of course, the big stepping stone to WrestleMania. This year, the Rumble is going to be interesting in how it's promoted, because you've got to fill the Alamo Dome. And this is not like 97, where you are going to discount the hell out of tickets and it's going to be really cheap per head. It's going to be a big event. And how much are you throwing to draw this Royal Rumble house while still preserving enough for WrestleMania? Do you think there's going to be a delicate balancing act of how much we give to fill the Rumble and the Alamo Dome and still have enough special attractions and matches ready just a few months later for WrestleMania?
And they have a or they have an event between WrestleMania and the Rumble. We can't sleep on that. So there's a lot of shit up in the air, and a lot of it comes down to where's the Undertaker in this equation, and where's Shawn Michaels in this equation? AJ Styles put out that picture in October. They don't do that kind of stuff for no reason. And even if they do Shawn versus AJ, they're going to probably need another big match and then the Rumble. Is it Undertaker versus Goldberg? Is it Undertaker versus Brock? Is it Braun Strowman versus Brock Lesnar? Eventually Braun Strowman, hopefully.
Taker and James Ellsworth.
Jeez.
L's in a cell.
Strowman, though, I tell you, down the road.
Hey, man, he has over-exceeded my expectations as they've taken him out of those enhancement matches. I mean, people are taking to this guy, and he's in a protected role at this point, and I give them credit. They have done well with this monster character. We'll see how far they can take it, but thus far, I've been impressed with what they've done with him so far.
Down the road, you really might want a pencil in Brock Lesnar. Not now. Not maybe in 2017, but down the road, maybe that is where you cash in. Can't say now, but you got to see where he is in a year. And
like, you imagine.
Listen, that's kind of the ideal scenario. I know it sounds almost crazy, but that's kind of the ideal scenario because Brock should be beating all these guys, slaying these guys, and they cash in on the next big monster. Strowman, hopefully, if he can continue to improve and they take him out on the road and he's working longer and longer matches against veterans and having to do live TV and not just do one-dimensional squash matches, he should hopefully continue to improve. He's exceeded expectations, and you can't sleep on that.
Is that when Paul Heyman turns on Brock and aligns with Strowman, and then we have the Brains and the Brawn? Moving on, WrestleMania tickets are going on sale Friday. This, according to Darren Rovell, they have sold out all of their travel packages. This is astounding. These travel packages, Court, range from $950 to $5,900 per person. And that includes tickets to all of the events going on. I mean, WrestleMania is going to be a hot ticket regardless of what is on the card. Are you expecting a monster first day of ticket sales on Friday for the general public? Or do you think this is going to be, not the size of what AT&T Stadium was this year, but where this tickets will be available right up until the show? Because the Citrus Bowl, they did not fill last time in 2008. They had to do some papering late for that one.
It was a different time, too. That was a compelling match that they had there.
Well, they were getting off the loss of Court Bauer in 2008. They were in a rehab mode.
I think they'll do very well. And I don't know if they'll sell out. I would say they do very well, if not sell out. The conditions are looking good for them to do good business in March or in April, actually. And just tracking where, like, compared to Dallas for Wally Mania, I'm not trying to plug it, but just tracking where we were. Well, we didn't put tickets on sale this early, but even when we put them on in February, we're way ahead of that for just Wally Mania. Now, WrestleMania is not Wally Mania. It's a huge motherfucker. I think that based on just the appetite for stuff, even on a Thursday night like our thing, WrestleMania at the Citrus Bowl, I might sell out.
And it's been renovated too, so it's not the renovation project that it was in 2008 where they had to sink a ton into that.
And we can't sleep on the fact that WWE has offices, has a promotional staff, marketing staff, live event staff down in Orlando on the street. 24/7, 365 with the WWE Performance Center. They didn't have that in 2008. They didn't have the ability to say, hey, Finn Balor, can you do an on-sale ticket appearance? Can you pump this up? Can you go talk? Their media contacts, their connections are 20. I mean, it's nonstop there. They can pump this up every week going into WrestleMania because a lot of their guys that are even on the main roster are based out of Orlando nowadays. So they have the infrastructure down there to really – make this big and make this the most successful year they've done at WrestleMania. Maybe, again, no. It's not going to be Dallas in terms of size, but I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, I mean, WrestleMania is such a hotter event than it was in 2008. Even in this decade, mm-hmm. I mean, it is just so much bigger now, even than 2008. I think it's going to do significantly well come next April. But the Alamo Dome, that's going to be interesting, running such big stadium events in such a close proximity to one another. We have a shorter show this week, but quickly ending things off here. Do you have any thoughts on the Joey Styles story and the fallout as he has been dropped by Evolve, Beyond Wrestling, and Chikara? I discussed this in depth with Way the other day on Review of SmackDown. Do you have any thoughts, Court, as a former promoter yourself, looking at it from that situation, as Gabe Sapolsky and others did?
No, I covered it, too, on Tuesday, and at this point, you know, in the week, it's been kind of done to death, but you can't really... You really can't knock Gabe for making the call he made. It was an unfortunate joke made, and the climate right now.
It was a bad judgment call, but I don't.
Right. It's just the climate. You know, you're talking just days removed for something that was a very charged topic down here in the States. And I'm not going into politics. No one's listening to the show to hear politics. But it's something that some people felt very strongly about. And, you know, you could also say, well, if you tune in to SNL, you heard Dave Chappelle make almost the same kind of joke. Yeah, but the other issue is Gabe asked him to not go here. And so live TV and instincts and trying to improvise sometimes can lead to incredible things, and other times can lead to incredible negative events such as this. And it's unfortunate, but you know, life will go on, and that's it. You know, it's unfortunate for all involved, but I agree with the decision that was made by Evolve Management.
Well, that is going to wrap things up.
Wow, what a shitty way to end the show on such a low.
Well, I mean,
come on, give us something. Let's talk.
Well, I don't know. I wasn't expecting you to just recite a press release for me here.
Well, a press release? What do you want me to do here? I mean, it's a shitty situation.
We do not condone this message by Joey Styles. We wish him all of the best. I do believe that Joey Styles, this will not be the end of his career. I didn't disagree with the decision. I think it was just awful judgment on his part, and he's going to pay the penance, but this should not be, you know, this guy is excommunicated from a future work in wrestling, which it will not.
That's highly unlikely, as Gorilla Monsoon would say.
Hey, you dropped that little nugget a few weeks ago about Hulk Hogan and his involvement with the WWE Network, and who did we see in that opening video package before SmackDown on Tuesday night? There he is, face-to-face with Brock Lesnar from 2002.
There you go. The road to WrestleMania 33.
Orlando, hey, brother.
Here's the thing. Going back to your discussion about the Network, he was the Network barker, and maybe they're feeling, well, maybe he can get him back in here, do some barking for the Network. You know, they really are looking in every way to pump this up. Is that a viable solution? We'll see. Will people accept Hulk Hogan in WWE again? That's up to the people. And that's the same thing with Joey Styles. It's going to ultimately come up. It's up to the fans and your fan base.
Maybe Hulk Hogan will have a new title. He will be the president-elect of the WWE Network. And he can go around as the president of the WWE Network. It can be his new role, selling the network. What's coming up in MLW land?
Good question. I have no idea because I was ill-prepared for this podcast. I will plug one thing. Damian Abraham has a fantastic documentary out.
Yes.
That I forgot to tweet about, so I'm going to plug it on the podcast. Sorry, Damian. I will tweet about it.
That documentary is doing just fine.
Yeah,
I think everyone's seen it. It's doing tremendously well. Vice Canada sent Damian down to cover CZW's Tournament of Death, and it's really worth checking out. He chatted about it on our show a couple of weeks ago on Review Away. Definitely worth catching, and all you have to do is go search for it on YouTube.
Really well put together. I highly recommend it. Check it out. And with that said, the only thing I'll plug is we have a new History in the Making out that Matt Farmer and I did, looking back at Jim Barnett, his early years. It's part one of a two-parter. We did about 2.5 hours on Jim Barnett in total. That just dropped today. I give stories probably never told before from the likes of Dusty Rhodes, the Briscoes, and Gary Hart. They all shared these stories with me about Jim Barnett, who was a fascinating, very influential guy from 1949 until about 2004 in pro wrestling. And, I mean, he brokered some major deals, be it the Crockett's selling to TBS, be it WWF getting their syndication package when they were expanding in 83, 84, and 85, or pumping up wrestling on TBS in the 70s and the Dumont era in the 50s. I mean, he touched everything in terms of the business and is a huge power broker that was the man behind the curtain, the man whispering in the ear of Vince McMahon, Ted Turner, Sam Muchnick, and so many others. He's a guy you need to learn about. Check it out. Jim Barnett, history in the making at MLWVIP.com. It costs just $1.99 to subscribe to get that VIP exclusive show. We have other exclusive shows from Jim Cornette. We have MLW Radio Extra. We have Indie-rific, a ton of great content. All of our archives, the whole Talking Shop library is back there with Gallows, Anderson, and AJ Styles. And again, just $1.99 at MLWVIP.com.
All right, and up at liveaudiowrestling.com, plenty of shows, including a recent interview I did with Chris Jericho, 28 minutes in length, that you can check out on the site, as well as youtube.com/liveaudiowrestling. We have shows coming up this weekend, including The Law. Sunday night, myself and Jason Agnew will be live at midnight after the Survivor Series, running through all that goes down in Toronto this weekend, so you can keep it locked there. And Court and I will be back next week, right here, same time, same place, same court.
Wait, it's Thanksgiving.